Philadelphia Union, San Jose Earthquakes, United, Los Angeles Galaxy,
Beach Pass,
Colorado Rapids, Vancouver Whitecaps, Orlando City SC, Montreal Impact, NYCFC, Seattle Sounders.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
We have a really good show. I'm going to dare to say B-plus show lined up for you today. Thank you very much for downloading. And I want to give a little special thank you to everybody who listened to the last few weeks, the 2015 season, if you will. Been a lot of conversation about Pitch Pass on social media. It feels like people are starting to figure out and understand what we're all about. And it makes us so happy. The entire Pitch Pass staff thanks you for listening, for downloading, and here's your next park, your homework assignment, for sharing it with your friends. I told you, we've got a very, very good show lined up for you. From Fox Sports 1, Alexi Lalas will join us later. I will ask him about the interview and the question that he asked of Don Garber a couple weeks ago. Plus, get into some of the Fox Sports coverage of MLS. I have been very surprised, pleasantly, with how great and how quality the broadcasts have been. We'll talk to him about that, the friendlies that the national team just went through, and some other things as well. But we kick off the show with a man who is finally back 100% healthy and now starting to bang in some goals again. He knocked in the game winner on Saturday at RFK versus Los Angeles Galaxy, hoping he thawed out by this point. It's Chris Pontius. He joins us right now on the show. Chris?
Hey, what's up, Roach?
How are you, man?
I'm all right, dude. How you doing?
Wait, let me get in the mindset for Friday. Christopher Richard Pontius, welcome to Pitch Pass.
How you doing, guys?
Because, you know, that's the UniMas way. They give you the full names. That's how I know everybody's middle name in MLS. It's perfect.
Yeah, Dax has the best one for UniMas, though.
Well, because they
Ninja?
Yeah, well, the guy who does the UniMas broadcast, he doles out Ginger Ninja pretty easy. Laurentiewicz gets it. Like, there's like seven guys in MLS who are the Ginger Ninja for him.
Yeah. Laurentiewicz has got it, too.
Laurentiewicz has it. There's another guy, I can't remember the other Ginger in the league. He gets it. Everybody gets it if they have kind of reddish hair.
Yeah, I kind of like it, though. I like that nickname. I don't know what my nickname would be, but
it wouldn't be as cool. It would not be as cool as a Ginger Ninja. The thing I learned about Dax was that's his middle name, not his first name. Thank you, UniMas, for that.
What's his first name, Michael?
Michael Dax McCarty is what they refer to him as.
And his dad's name, Dart.
Exactly. I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
I got to get his parents tickets to this game's weekend, actually.
But how far away are they from the hub of everything that's happening around Orlando City?
I think they're like 45. They're in Winter Park, I believe.
Okay, that's a nice turnaround though. For DC people, 45 minutes is their commute to work.
Exactly. It's mine, and I only live like I lied. Mine's like 30.
30.
And I only live in Clarendon.
I was gonna say you are literally 6 miles away, but it's a 30-minute commute.
But it takes 30 minutes every day. There's a lot of traffic.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Are you close with the McCartys?
I'm close with Dax. Yeah, and I've met his parents a few times. A nice family. So
will you definitely shoot a text over saying, "Hey, I'll leave you two tickets if you want to come. Fine. If not, no big deal."
Dax is getting a little greedy and asking for six.
What?
Yeah.
How many people does Dax know that he can invite six along?
That's a good question. He said for his family, and I know he's only got one brother. So TJ said he's got his brother covered. It's getting shady. I'm going to have to find out who he's inviting to this game.
Well, I guess the question is, why is Dax trying to get all these tickets to an Orlando City DC United match?
I don't know. He's sucking up to someone, clearly.
So, look, here's a good transition, by the way. I was there on Saturday. It was a little bit chilly Saturday night at RFK.
Freezing.
A little bit chilly. How is it? Now, we talked at length, and we've asked a lot of soccer players, and they're used to the difference of, okay, in the middle of August at BBVA Compass, it's going to be 97 degrees with 100% humidity. Which do you prefer? But rarely do you get the situation where you get what you had Saturday at RFK, and if you weren't there or didn't hear, it was probably about 30 degrees with a 20-mile-an-hour wind, so it was frigid. And then you've got Friday, less than a week later, you're going to be in 70, 80 degrees temperatures. How is that transition, doing it in less than a week?
It's going to be difficult, to be honest, because we just haven't had any real warm weather around here in D.C. I'd be lying if I said it was going to be an easy transition. You know, it's something that but we're going to have to be a little bit smarter with how we move the ball and in our runs. But hopefully we can manage it and, you know, keep the ball, keep them on the run. I think that's going to be the best defense will be hopefully possession for us and keeping them moving, tire them out first.
And the good thing is you're getting there in April rather than June, July, August. So you're going to miss at least the humidity part of the temperatures.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's brutal when you go down there and play in the summer or in Houston in the summer.
Yep.
There's a few places. Even D.C. can be pretty bad at times. I certainly know we've had a few games here that have drained me of my energy. And it's just crazy. It's like they always say it's the dog days of summer. You know, you got to get through them somehow. But I'm glad we're going down there at this point later on in the year.
Let me ask you some cold weather questions, things that I was thinking about as I was sitting in my seat with three, four layers of clothes on. And I bought one of those big DC United throw towels at halftime. It was really, really cold. So the only time, the whole match, I'm thinking to myself, just questions that I would be thinking about if I was on the field. First question is, how hard is it during national anthems to just kind of stand there when you're wearing those tops, but those things are pretty thin, and you got the shorts on? Is that a situation where you've already blocked it out, or the whole time are you thinking to yourself, boy, I hope this is the quick version of the anthem here?
No, I wasn't thinking about it then. The time when I thought it was like, dang, it's cold, is when Birnbaum actually went down in the first minute.
Yes.
And we had like 2 minutes where we were kind of standing around waiting for him to get off the field. That's when I was like, oh, pretty cold out here. I didn't realize it before because I had so many layers on when you're warming up and stuff. So that's when I really felt the weather.
Because
you expect running again.
Yeah, you expect the anthem to, you're like, all right, I got to get through the anthem. Once we start running, we'll be good to go. Then that happens in the first minute, and then you're just kind of hanging around for a few minutes unexpectedly.
Yeah, so obviously not the start we wanted to the game, losing Steve. So, it was a challenge to get going. But no, I thought we managed it well. It wasn't the greatest weather field to be playing that game on, but obviously come out with 3 points, so we'll take it.
After the match, after, of course, you scored the game-winning goal in literally the last minute of play, third minute of stoppage time, you had to do your post-game interviews and stuff. At that point, and I know you get to throw the big parka on, but at that point, does it start to set in like, hey, man, let me get out of here so I can get in the locker room?
Oh, I was freezing. I won't even lie. But then I had to go. My family was there as well at the game, so I had to go say hi to them. They stuck around. They braved through it. So I went to hi to them after.
That wasn't Cali weather for the Pontiuses.
No. I think they just landed back last night, and they're in 85-degree weather again today. So I think they're going through the same transition we're going to have to go through when we go down to Orlando.
Our good friend Sebastian Salazar conducted the post-game interview with you with Bruce Murray. I don't know if you remember, if you were just in the moment, but looking at it on TV later as I watched it, he looked like he was frozen solid. Did you feel like you wanted to give him a hug just to warm him up a little bit?
I would have given Sebastian a hug at that point. I was pretty happy.
And then I guess the last thing is, and this, the only person I would ask in the league is of this question is probably you. How do you manage snots and stuff during those matches? Because I know I was having some really big nose runnage issues, and you're out there. You got no real sleeve to wipe it off on. How do you manage that situation?
You just hope the camera's not on you when you're blowing it out. Or you're going to end up as a GIF on Twitter and people making fun of you. I guess that's the only way you manage it.
Because you have to do it, right? I mean, your nose does run. You got to get the snot rockets going. You just hope that it's a part. You're like, oh, you know what? Ball's on the other side of the field. Time to get
exactly.
rid of it.
Camera's away from me. I can get that out now. And hope someone in the fans doesn't see it and call you out as well on Twitter.
I don't understand the guys who do it. So, you know, a play builds up. It gets to you. You take a shot. It goes wide. It goes high. It goes whatever. Then you start to track back. Then you do the snot rocket. I don't understand that mentality. You know you're going to be on TV at that moment.
No, it's especially bad for baseball players, too, as well. I've seen a number of them get caught in the dugout with that one, so man, you just got to be smart about it.
But it's got to be done.
It's got to be done.
All right. I just wanted to be, because I thought maybe you guys did something in advance where you did the Vicks and cleared yourselves out so you were nothing when you get to the field.
No, I do put Vicks on my jersey, though. That's just to mainly, it does help clear it out a little bit, but not that much.
How great is it to not have to answer questions about how you're feeling?
It's nice, yeah, it's nice. It's nice to get 2 90-minute games underneath my belt,
yep.
too, and actually, you know, feel like I could could play another one. So, I mean, it's good. Obviously the last year and the year before has been just a real struggle. But over the hump and hopefully more happy days to come.
It's nice to know that people care. But I know just you and me, the last few times I've seen you, my second question has been how you feeling. So I would imagine everybody that you know, when you see them over the course of the last 2 years, the first question is, hey, man, how you feeling? And you're like, look, I'm feeling better. Can we just move on and get with the rest of the conversation?
Yeah, I prefer the congrats on the game.
Yes.
I prefer that more than how's the hamstring.
Exactly. Now, do you have to do anything different on a cold night like last Saturday to get yourself together, or is it normal training, normal routine of stretching, getting yourself ready?
Yeah, normal routine. No, I don't switch anything up. If anything, some guys use hot packs or get in the hot tub before the game. But I'm normal routine, and didn't need anything else to get me going that game.
So let me ask you this. I mean, you've been through this situation that Eddie Johnson is going through right now, and that's long-term injury, different type of situation, obviously, but kind of having to chomp your bit on the sideline while you wait to see what happens. Have you spoken to him at any point in 2015? And if you have, what are some of the things that you've told him based on your experience of having to sit out to kind of get him back or in the mindset that he needs to be while he waits?
Yeah, I've spoken to Eddie, but not – it actually hasn't been about many of the conditions that are going on with him. More so joking, friendly,
yeah.
Take his mind off of things. So nothing to deal with his condition. When you hear it so much, how's your hamstring or how's this? You just don't want to have those conversations at a certain point. I'm pretty sure that's probably where he's at right now. I've spoken with him, but it hasn't been anything about his condition.
Is the hardest part being away from the guys where you, and I say that in the sense of you're there, you're rehabbing, but you're not on the pitch, so you're not kind of doing those shared experiences day to day. Is that the hardest part?
Well, it can be, to be honest, it can go both ways, because I know that last season at one point when I went to look at the second surgery, I wanted to stay in LA just because I was so frustrated. And it wasn't anything to do with the guys, but I was so frustrated of being around and not being able to play that it was kind of eating at me a lot. So I know some people that like to do, whether it's rehabbing in a different state, just to refocus, get in a different mindset, than being around all the guys every day. So I know that some people like to do that, but there is a certain, I like to be around the locker room more so after a week of being home. I wanted to get back just mainly to be around the guys to brighten up my mood on bad days where I was struggling to rehab. They were there to help me and pick me up. So I know some people that prefer it the one way, but I preferred to be around the locker room.
You mentioned the last two matches you've gone 90 minutes both matches, which has got to be feel really good for you personally. You never like to see injuries through your teammates or for your teammates. But having said that, if there was a full complement of squad and they had all the attacking options that United would normally have, not sure that you would go 90 minutes both times. So in a way, I mean, thinking about it for you, it's good because you're getting a chance to show Ben, hey, look, I'm a 90-minute guy now. I can go 90 minutes. And, when everybody comes back healthy and it's going to be competition for places, I've already at least staked a claim that this is what I can do and I can do whatever you'd ask me to do.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a good point. I don't think the plan even in New York was to push me 90 minutes. It's just, obviously Ben making the decisions in the game and what he thought we needed. And he saw I wasn't struggling or anything like that. So I was very, very surprised at how I felt at the end of that game. Because since if you haven't played 90 minutes in a long time, it can be, especially those last 15, 20 minutes, they can be a struggle to get through. I was pleasantly surprised with how I felt in the game. Obviously wanted to come on top and pick up a goal or two, but nice to get one in the last minute and get our season, get another win for us at home.
Now, I saw that you and Rolf in the New York game did the switch where he dropped back or you dropped back to midfield and he went up top. And afterwards, I don't know if it was you or Rolf that said that you guys kind of just looked at each other and said, okay, unspoken thing where I'm gonna fall back. You push forward and see how it goes. Is that how it happened? And if it is how it happens, does Benny pull you aside later going, hey, man, what was up with that?
No, I think I forget how it exactly happened, but I think we kind of have a free role in terms of me, Nick DeLeon, Rolf. We can all play that underneath position, and we can all play out wide. So there's a good understanding that if, you know, a play breaks down and someone has to cover, we just got to fill in roles and fill in slots. And I had done that with Rolfie, and we actually had some joy of the ball after that. So we kind of just figured we'd stay there. And I thought in the second half, you know, we had some possession against New York. We had some chances, just so unfortunate not to put them away. So we just stuck with it. It was just kind of through the run of the game, what we thought it needed. And now Ben didn't have a problem with it because, you know, it seemed to give us a little bit more possession, and which we were desperately lacking in the first half.
You know, you look at Rolf, veteran. You're getting to the point now where if you are not already considered a veteran, you will assume that mantle. I look at the CBA and the agreement that was just reached, and a lot of people said, well, this free agency thing is still a little restrictive. Not a lot of guys in MLS are in a position where they're going to see free agency. DC United is in a different situation. You look at Perry Kitchen and the career track he's on. He's somebody that could take advantage of the free agent situation. But I think maybe, you know, you're one of the first guys up as you approach your eighth year. That's kind of the situation. Do you think about that kind of thing? When the CBA was announced and you saw the free agency things, did you not ears perk up as thinking myself, I'm leaving or whatever, but was it something you were like, oh, that's something that I'm going to be qualified for in just a couple of seasons?
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that I'm aware of. You know, I'd like to see the numbers down even more, but
yeah,
you know, it's progress, it's baby steps. That's how most negotiations work. And, you know, the league is still relatively new compared to other leagues around the U.S. and the world. Obviously I'm going to be 28 this year. This is my seventh year, so I've got one more year kind of towards that thing. But I'll take that when I'll deal with that when it comes time. But right now, I've been so happy just being able to play 90 minutes that it really, you know, after once the deal got signed, I was just kind of focused on the season and not really too worried about that stuff.
Well, how far do you have on your contract?
There's options and stuff like that.
Of course.
It's complicated to explain it to them.
Why is it, Chris, and I'm not singling you out, but why is it that for every sport in American sports, I know exactly when people's deals are up. But in MLS, we're clueless as to when people's contracts are up, what these options are. Like, it's even like baseball, it's player option, team option, joint option. We never know any of this stuff in MLS.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I guess this is kept under wraps more. I'm not sure why. I can tell you in person. I'm not going to tell you over the bribe, but I can tell you in person.
Well, I guess the next step is, so, you know, MLS obviously keeps everything close to the vest, but the union puts out the salaries mid-season and at the end of the season. I'd also like, if you could pass it along at the next union meeting, I'd also like them to go out contract length. Who has how much longer left? Because I feel like that's also a talking point that would make – that would make the union look a little better as it goes up against MLS, the league.
Definitely a good point to be brought up.
No, thank you.
Seriously, it is, yeah. That's something we look at every angle when we're approaching these meetings and stuff like that, and what we think we can get and what we think is the best way to approach them. So definitely a point to be brought up.
Can we just establish with a yes answer that you love RFK, you love everything about it, it's the grand old lady, it's a fortress, we love that people fear coming in here, we love how loud and how much the stands shake, and we love everything about RFK. Can that be established? Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so let's daydream about the new stadium since you love RFK so much. What? Because for me, as a fan who is dying for the new stadium, and you, as a player who is in a point in his career where, you know, it's not outside the realm of possibilities that you will play for DC United in this new stadium, How often do you ask for updates from the people around you as far as the organization is concerned?
Probably not as much as you do.
No, probably not, I would say.
No.
But
no,
how?
To be honest, we only hear what you guys hear. It's whatever is put in the papers, put in the press. That's basically what I hear. I was excited. Obviously, very excited to get the stadium deal done. But as for when it will be not finalized, I guess, but be built by, and when we're in there, I have no clue. So that's something that, like I said, out of my control, way over my head in terms of if I have any control in it. So don't really think about it too much.
So Levian comes to a match. He comes into the locker room afterwards. Hey, Chris, man, great header. Thanks for saving the 3 points. I appreciate it. And you go, thanks, Jason. One quick question. Shovels in the ground. Are we looking September? Are we looking? You don't ask any of those questions.
I haven't asked him yet. I thanked him right after we got the deal done. I said, thank you very much.
Okay, so when you daydream, because, you know, this is Chris Pontius who was living in his first place here in D.C. when he got to D.C. United. Chris Pontius gets the nice contract, moves into a bigger place. Before he moves in, he starts thinking about, oh, I want this, I want that, I want this in my new place. I like the good view, overlooking the district, whatever. What are the things that you're thinking about for a new stadium when you start daydreaming about being in a new stadium and being away from RFK?
I still would like an area for fans to tailgate.
Jeez, man, why are you such a giver? This is where you'd be selfish and go, I want the high end whirlpools. I want this.
Oh, well, that's granted. If you're building a new stadium, you're not going to put an old rusty tub in there.
But that's what I'm asking, because we, the fans, know what we want in our new stadium. For the player's point of view, what is something that the fans wouldn't know about that you would go, I can't wait to get into the stadium to get this upgraded?
I've never actually been into Kansas City's locker room, but I've seen those nice chairs they've got.
Oh, they don't have that in the visitor locker room as well. I thought that was just.
No. I would like those in the locker room.
Do you want the nice chair?
Yeah, I heard they like can charge your phone and everything, play music over them. I was like this.
You're a man of very simple taste. You know what? Just give me a nice chair, and I'll be very, very happy.
I'll be happy. I might fall asleep in that chair every once in a while. So,
do we need to talk about your golf game before we go?
Hey, I'm about to break 90.
What?
Yeah.
So what is that? Night. What does that make your handicap? Like 12?
No.
Oh.
No. I'm a bogey, double bogey golfer.
So
with a few pars in between.
How good is Birnbaum and Taylor Kemp that they were able to beat you and Davey in preseason?
Hold on. Who told you that?
No. That's what's going around.
That's a complete lie. Actually, Birnbaum and Taylor owe me and Davey a free round of golf.
Wait, what? So they didn't beat you?
No. We play teams and basically total score. And me and Davey have won, I think, 4 out of 4 times.
Well, so why don't we break up the squads then? You know, let's break up the good players, put them on.
It's actually nice that Steve and Taylor are stubborn enough and stupid enough to think that they can still beat us.
You want to keep playing, that's fine. Because, see, I was ready to say with Steve on the shelf, you know, the upside is you could work on your game knowing that he couldn't work on his game because of the ankle.
No. Steve is notorious for finding the water. Especially on 17 and 18, he really crumbles. It's great. It's actually pretty funny to watch. I'll take a video for you next time.
Yeah, please do. And that's interesting because I thought California guy, he'd be able to get out a lot and play. But now you're telling me that he's got – what does he have, a hook? Yeah. What does he have, a hook or a slice?
Oh, he's got a slice. So he actually plays the slice well off the tee. But then he just gets real nervous whenever he's going over water.
Gets in his head.
Yeah. It's in his head. He's a mental midget at times.
So is he one of those guys that when he's in the tee box, he's actually facing like the cart path so he can make sure when he hits it, it goes straight?
Yeah, he does, actually. He does. he has to go all the way to the left. And then he's actually pissed at himself when he hits the ball straight because then it's going in the tree.
Yeah, then it's going way – yeah, it's just slicing right off of the sunset. So you're confirming that you and Davey currently are the champs in the Kemp-Birnbaum twosome.
currently are and have been the only champs in it. We haven't lost yet.
Okay.
Me and Davey. We lost one time, but that was like midsummer last year.
Yeah, but things have kind of switched.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're firmly entrenched.
Yeah.
So is the goal breaking 90 consistently?
I want to be, by the end of the year, I want to be like low 80s.
Low 80s?
Like, yeah, I'd like to. I don't know if that's realistic, but that's my goal.
Now, without saying, because I know you're going to be out at some point, but, you know, nobody knows when you're going to be there. What's the course in the area, in the D.C. area, that you like to hit up?
We play 1757 probably the most. That's out in Ashburn.
I was going to say, I have no idea. I do only Maryland courses because I'm a Maryland
guy.
I do Maryland courses.
Yeah, we sick. I actually told Taylor we need to get on that the Maryland, University of Maryland golf course.
Yeah, that's an easy course. Yeah, and it's good. It's a solid course.
Yeah, so I told him we could just go after training one day and get in a quick 18.
Exactly. So, I'm sure he gets a discount of some sort.
He better.
I mean, he's a legend at the University of Maryland. He should.
Legend is a pretty strong word to be using for Taylor.
As soon as I said it, I was like, that might be a little too strong.
Yeah, a little strong. He never won a national championship. Oh, did he win a national? No, he never won a national championship.
Before I let you go.
Did he really?
No, I don't think he did. Wait, did he?
I was just informed that he missed a penalty kick.
Wait, he missed a PK in the national championship game.
No, in the final four.
You know what? That's something.
Just showing that, you know, Steve and Taylor both can't.
Mental midgets.
Take the pressure.
You said it.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing this thing, and I'm sure MLS, I think they're doing it all across the league, where they're putting the season ticket holders had the chance to put a picture in a number. And then throughout the month of August, at least I know DC United and I know San Jose are doing it, you will wear the jerseys with the numbers, and inside the numbers it'll have the season ticket holders' faces in there. Chris,
right.
I chose the number 3 because of you and Bobby, and I put a very great picture of myself in there that I'm sure you'll be very, very proud to have on your back.
How big is your face going to be on that number?
I hope it takes up the entire 3. That's what I'm hoping for.
Are you smiling in it?
I am definitely. I'm smiling. My wonk eye is off to the side, which is perfect. And I have a mustache because I took it in November. So it's just a really fantastic picture.
That's the trifecta right there.
So I just want you to know, when you get those pictures, look on your jersey in the number 3, and you will see a wonk eyed Greg Roach in there for you.
First thing I'll search for.
Chris, thank you very much, man. I appreciate the time, and great job Saturday. Keep it going throughout the season. And unlike most times when I say this to players, I actually mean it for you, because you know I'm a DC United fan.
I appreciate it, Rich. Good talking to you, man.
Look, it's my favorite team. I love DC United, but I will tell you, Chris Pontius in form is good for everyone in the United States. Yes, it is still not too late for him to start his international career. My uneducated opinion, there's not too many players like Chris Pontius in the current U.S. national team setup. So it'd be nice if he got back to full form, full fitness, and back into the national team picture. Speaking of the national team, we'll talk a little national team with our next guest, but I want to kick off with a couple of other things, including the coverage that his network is doing for MLS this year. I'm talking about Fox Sports. Alexi Lawless, he joins us right now. Hey, Alexi.
Hello.
Alexi, we're going to start a different way. Usually we ask you for your analysis, your commentary on things. That's what you do for a living. But I actually want to start with talking about yourself for a little bit, if that's all right.
Sure.
You know, I think a lot of people had reservations when MLS rights went to Fox Sports because of their what happened in the past, especially with Fox Soccer and whatnot. For me personally, I've been pleasantly surprised at the quality of the broadcast, especially you, Alexi. You've added a lot to the mix. But I guess my question to start is, when you were being courted by Fox Sports, did you have any of those reservations? And what did they do to kind of alleviate your fears of this isn't going to be a backburner thing? This is going to be high quality production that you're going to see for all the major sports, and MLS is going to be included in that.
Well, their desire to hire me aside, they did promise me that they were going to, do it right, for lack of a better phrase. And look, perception in our industry is important, and it colors everything that we do. I had watched Fox previously, and just like any channel, there's things that I liked, things that I didn't. But ultimately, we talked about what we wanted to do, what we wanted to do with how we broadcasted soccer in the United States, and the increased and elevated expectations that have come with the progress and the evolution of the game. And I was very, very fortunate to work for ESPN for a long time. And if I had any value, it was because of the platform that ESPN and the opportunity that ESPN gave me. And I was privileged to be a part of the World Cup coverage over the last couple of World Cups. And I think in the way that we covered the World Cup, we, for to use a Klinsmann phrase, we raised the bar. And that was important. And if I was going to go someplace, I wanted to go to a place that was going to recognize that you can't just throw this together. And I talked to them, and so far so good. I appreciate the fact that that people are watching, and that people at least can notice that we're trying to do it right. You're never going to please everybody,
yeah.
And that doesn't matter where you go. But we still have things to do, but I think we can also do it while recognizing that others have done it very well, also do it in a unique Fox way, if
yep.
you will. And I think that you're going to see that as we go along with the Women's World Cup this summer and Gold Cup, and our coverage of the U.S. men's national team, and obviously MLS being back there. So look, this is a work in progress, and I'm happy to be part of that progress.
And you kind of hit the nail on the head when you said that, you know, it looks great, but you're doing it the Fox way. You're not trying to be like NBC, SN was, how they handled it last year, or ESPN and how they do things. You're doing things in a very Fox way. It also looks really good, bringing in John Strong, bringing in yourself.
Yep.
It's all kind of given credibility to everything going on, combined with the production. At what point, because there's a difference between being courted and actually being on the staff, at what point when you were on staff did you look around and go, okay, everything they told me they were going to do, it looks like it's happening? Did something happen in your first few weeks that gave you that, okay, they weren't just blowing smoke to get me on board, now I know they're men of their word, women of their words?
Yeah, I mean, when you talk to the men and women that are involved, especially behind the scenes, because, look, we're a bunch of talking heads, and they call us talent, on-air talent. Sometimes that's a little misleading. But when I show up, and the hiring of John Strong, like you said, and I'm sitting next to guys like Rob Stone,
yep.
and Eric Winalda, as much as people yell and scream about Eric, the fact is that he's entertaining. And people want to see what he is going to say. And Warren Barton, who I just have more and more respect for every single day. And they threw me right into the mix. And to use another Jurgen Klinsmann phrase, I was taken out of my comfort zone. And it's been wonderful. It's been interesting to try to get up to speed when it comes to FA Cup and Champions League and all the different things that have been done there. But really talking to the decision makers and the people that ultimately are in charge of the money and the direction with the way that it's gone, and having them look me in the eye and say, look, we are going to do this, and we are going to do this right. And that's important any time that you're working with somebody. It's all fine and well to have the people around you talking about wanting to do it right, but the people that ultimately make those decisions, the men and women that are in charge of that, you want to make sure that you have buy-in from them. And from the very get-go, talking to the mucky mucks there, they were committed and are committed to doing this. But like you said, in a unique way, and in a I hesitate to use this phrase, but I'm going to, in an American way. And
yes.
That's a good thing. Oftentimes we apologize for that, and I don't think that we are at a point now where we have to apologize for that. It's going to be a Fox way. It's going to be a uniquely American way in which we televise it. And I think ultimately that is going to resonate, especially as more and more generations become much more accustomed to having soccer as part of their sports landscape, whether it's to follow in going to the stadiums or as a sport, or just watching it on television.
We're trying to have him on in the next few weeks, and hopefully it'll happen. But I wanted to ask you, as somebody who has observed him, how excited is Stoner to be able to do these MLS matches? We know he's a huge soccer guy, and we know that he's a huge mm-hmm. MLS guy. He's had to kind of sit on the sidelines and watch MLS unfold the last few years, being at Fox. How excited is he to be back in the mix in a daily thing where MLS is front and center on his network?
I feel like he was, you know, look, for those of us that have worked in MLS, and I've worked with Rob for years, and if you go back and watch Rob's trajectory, there was always the soccer component. And I feel like he was out of the mix, but always wanting to be there. And it is, I don't want to say it's his first love, but certainly there is a credible sparkle that comes in his eye when you talk about MLS. And so for him to be back involved and doing things with MLS, I think is huge, because it is la cosa nostra. It is our thing. And so there is this passion and this undeniable connection that we all have with this league, the good, bad, and the ugly of it, and warts and all. It is still our thing, and to be a part of it. And just from a pure business standpoint, you want to be involved in MLS going forward. Yep. Because it is one of those trajectory type of things where it is only going to get more and more. And look, Rob's a pro in everything that he does, whether it's soccer or starts or basketball or anything, and he's fun to work with because he does have that connection and that that history when it comes to the game when we're talking about MLS.
Last thing on the coverage, and that would be about Stuart Holden. You know, yep. it stinks that we have to keep saying, prefacing the fact of how good he is, because we'd rather him be watching him than having him talk about what's going on. But you know, this is the situation that we're in. He's fantastic. As he comes across in the broadcast, how much preparation does he put in before he hits the air as a guy who, you know, probably is still thinking about rather being on the field, but still doing a fantastic job at what he's doing in the meantime?
Sure. I think Stu has come along, and he's kind of in this free agent type of position here, where we see him on a bunch of different channels, yep. including Fox. And I think he's starting to think about a life without soccer. And that's very, very hard, especially given his unique situation where he still hasn't retired, but we all know about the struggles from an injury standpoint that he has gone through, and he still holds out hope. And look, I don't begrudge him that hope at all. Play as long as you possibly can. Yeah. But I think he's in a great position that he's already recognized that I think that there is a career in television if he wants to take it. And look, he understands that it's work, whether it's work in terms of training for a soccer game or work in terms of that training and that study and that research that you do to make sure that you're prepared for when that game. It's all about work, and we find things and we grow as we go along. And look, I'm doing color now for the first time in a long time, and I've been such a studio rat for so long, and that is my comfort zone. And now next to John Strong, I mean, it's a whole different type of performance. And so I am studying and researching to make sure that every Sunday when we have our Soccer Sunday game on Fox Sports 1, that I'm sitting next to John Strong and I'm prepared and understand how to give that type of performance as opposed to maybe a studio performance that you see me give and have given in the past and will continue in, when it comes to World Cups like this summer with the Women's World Cup.
I wanted to ask you about your conversations, your on-air conversations with Don Garber. Look, mm-hmm. for media people, there's no such thing. I would assume there's no such thing as scripted questions, and if that were a situation, you probably would step aside. But having said that, there is a professional courtesy to say, hey, these are some of the things that we're going to be talking about in this conversation that we're going to be having on the cameras. Do you have that conversation with Don Garber before you hit the air, or is it totally, hey, Don, how are you? Shake hands. We're on in 10 seconds. Let's go.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because there were a lot of questions even after this last one about how I go about doing it. And I've interviewed him, I can't even count how many times. And I know for a fact that he enjoys it, because he knows that he's going to get, your softball question to start out, and then we're going to get into some nitty-gritty. And I think this jousting that we do is fun, because ultimately he answers a lot of questions, and he answers a lot of the same questions over and over again. I think it's my responsibility on there to certainly let him have the opportunity to say what he wants to say with regards to, good things and all the wonderful things that are happening, but also to hold his feet to the fire when it comes to things that people are asking. And I like to think that I do that. Now, as to your question on how prepared he is, Pippen, there has never been a question that's been that I've not been able to ask. I talk to his people, and he has plenty of people that come beforehand to try to get an understanding of some of what we're going to talk about. I rarely tell them exactly what I'm going to ask, but I do give them a heads up. Yeah. I don't want to be blindsiding anybody when it comes to an interview that they have agreed to do with us. And so they certainly have an idea of what's going to be asked and the difficult questions are going to be asked. And I want them to have some idea when it comes to it, because I want them to prepare and have to be able to, especially on television where we only have so much time, to be able to give a clear, concise, and articulated type of response.
Yeah, and I think for the viewer, I think that's what gets kind of muddled is it's not a situation where you're going to Garber's people and saying, I'm going to ask him this specific question about Minnesota United. It's more of, hey, I'm going to ask him about Minnesota United so that he knows yep. going in there's going to yep. be a question about Minnesota United, but he doesn't know what the question is going to be.
Sure, sure. And it's fun. I mean, look, I know Don personally, and we've talked in the past where – I think he looks forward to it. At least I like to think that he looks forward to it because there is an element of not knowing exactly what we're going to talk about, but we might get into some things that are going to resonate. And he wants to talk about a lot of this stuff. He has a job to do and he has a business, and he's also very, very good when in steering things away if he feels that it's not yeah. appropriate for him to say specific things. And I try to steer him back on course and get to the root of those things. But this is the dance that we do, and I enjoy it. I respect him for coming on and answering questions and the tough questions at times, and it's a fun dance that I hope we can continue to do.
So having said that, after your last conversation, the one that kind of stirred the pot a little bit, did he express to you after it was over any discomfort or dislike in the line of questioning?
Never once. And, you know, he smiled and we shook hands after, and he never said that was inappropriate or anything like that. And for those that didn't see it, at one point I asked him about a comment that a potential owner down in Miami had made, calling one of the things that he liked about the business side of MLS was that it was quote unquote communist, and that got a lot of play. And so I asked Don Garber if he felt that the structure and the business, the way that MLS goes about its business, is communist. And, you know, he answered it actually wonderfully. And it was, I thought it was a fair question given
yep.
all the talk about MLS expansion and about the ownership, and especially coming off the CBA negotiations and all of this kind of stuff. So I enjoy that because, look, there's plenty of fluff out there, but I'm not interested in doing that. And when we have a short period of time at a halftime, I want to make sure that I'm asking questions that you at home either want to know the answer to or might not have thought to ask. And you can get something interesting other than everything is all beautiful and roses. And it's not, like I said, it's not to jam him up at all. I truly appreciate and respect the fact that he wants to come on and he wants to answer some difficult questions.
You're in the booth for MLS coverage on Fox Sports 1. For the friendlies that just recently happened, especially the one against Switzerland, you were in the back at the table with the rest of the analysts. What didn't yep. I'm going to take you at your word on Twitter, of which you've been kind of clear on, which is, you know, I don't dislike Jurgen Klinsmann, but there are things about what is going on with the current setup that I dislike. And during the broadcast, you were kind of the, yeah, they're up 1-0, but, blah, you know, you were kind of, I don't want to say sour grapes, but you were being more less roses and sunshine than the rest of the panel was. What didn't you like about the Switzerland friendly? And what of the things that you didn't like could we just directly attribute to Jurgen Klinsmann as opposed to maybe things not being executed correctly by the players?
Well, I still see players playing out of position, and Michael Bradley is the prime example, and that's a whole other show. But the reality is that I feel, and I think a lot of people feel, that Michael Bradley is much better at a withdrawn type of midfield position where he can come from deep and he can create from deep. And that's just an ongoing difference of opinion when we have. Obviously, Jurgen Klinsmann sees him much more as an attacking number 10 type of player, and I just don't think that that's the best position for Michael, even though there isn't somebody else that plays that position, and I will admit that whenever I'm talking about it. With regards to the team, it all goes back to the very beginning. Jurgen Klinsmann promised something that I believe he has not delivered on. He promised a fundamental change in the way that this team goes about playing. The philosophy, the proactive approach, the commitment to possession, all of that stuff that he promised at the beginning, I don't see it. I think that at times it's been just a better version of itself, and at times, unfortunately, as we've gone through this last year, it'll be fair to Jurgen Klinsmann, it's just friendlies, and the year after World Cup is a time for experimentation, but I feel at times we've lost, when we talk about this identity, not only is there not an identity right now, but some of the identity that has been built up over the last couple of decades has been lost in terms of the defensive posture and the difficulty in breaking down the U.S. team. And we look at the trend of continuing to give in late goals. And I have to be fair once again to Jurgen Klinsmann when it comes to that, because in friendlies you are doing things you wouldn't normally do in the games that we ultimately judge you. Having said that, when they do well in friendlies, I shouldn't be over the moon because it's the same type of argument. Yes, it's just a friendly. So it's just a friendly when they lose, and it's also just a friendly when they win or when they play well.
It seems as if where Jurgen gets himself in trouble with the media off the pitch is his decrees about what he feels he needs to see from players before he calls them in. And I feel like the poster child of everything that people are annoyed by with Jurgen Klinsmann is Breck Shea. You've got to earn your place in the team. He doesn't play. You've got to be in Europe. He goes to Europe and doesn't play. You've got to be playing in Europe. He doesn't play. But no matter what happens, he continues to be called in, contrary to what Jurgen goes out on a limb and says, the reason this guy isn't in camp is because he didn't do this. Well, Breck didn't do that, but he's still in. Where are you with Breck Shea right now? And how much does that goal, how much credit does that bank for him to the media, to American fans, and to Klinsmann himself?
It doesn't bother me in the slightest that Breck Shea, as you say, has failed to live up to what Jurgen Klinsmann has put out there as a criteria, if you will. Because from the day I started playing, I knew that form is fallacy and that it is all about personal opinion. And the first thing that I would tell any player starting out is, look, do you want to play on the national team? Fine. Go and do your business. But recognize that you may be the best player that the U.S. has ever produced, and you might not get called in because ultimately it is about personal preference. And I have no problem with that. What I do have a problem is when coaches, and to a certain extent they have to say this, look, I need you playing well, and I need you playing well in your club team, and I need you playing at your club team, and otherwise you're not going to get called in. We all know that that's not the case. A player, a coach looks at the personnel that he has out there, and yes, he wants his players playing well in the club, in their clubs, and yes, he wants them playing consistently. But ultimately, like I said, he or she is going to make that decision based on what he or she thinks is going to win the game. Not on how famous that player is, how many goals that player is scoring in club form or anything else. And so I don't necessarily have a problem. I would love for Jurgen Klinsmann or any other national team coach to come out and say, look, just go about your business. I'm going to pick who I think is appropriate.
Yeah.
Don't try to figure it out. I'm not going to give you a criteria. Just go and play. Make a lot of money, score a lot of goals, and if you fit what I believe is going to be successful for my team, I'm going to call you in. If not, that's just the way that it goes. And I know it scares the bejesus out of folks in the U.S. when we say that a talent is not being called in. Or in the case that you're talking about, maybe people believe that a lesser talent is being brought in. But the reality is, as we go on, there is going to be times where good players are not going to be called in because they don't necessarily fit what is appropriate for that national team. And that's okay. That's okay. Don't worry about that. But also don't get bent out of shape when you see players get called in, you might not think are good enough or haven't deserved anything.
Yeah.
Deserving really has nothing to do with it, to be quite honest, when it comes to the national team.
Agreed with that. And, you know, this isn't a thing to rip on Breck Shea. I think Breck is a very special player. I just, one of the things that concerns me is when you keep changing the rules to bring in a player who fits what you want to do, how much impetus is it on that player to work on the things that he is not excelling at?
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange existence being a national team coach because you have players, and you can take Breck Shea, for instance, who are playing in a certain system and playing in a certain way. You have coaches that you might have a different philosophy on coaching your players, and then you get them in for these short periods of time. I was pleased to see that Breck Shea at least played left back in the second game against the other day against Switzerland as opposed to midfield because, once again, Jurgen, at times, he puts players out of position, and it's almost as if he does it just because the masses are saying that this is where a player should play, or just because that's where the player has had success, I'm going to try him in a different position.
Yeah.
We've seen him do it, like I said, with Michael. We've seen him do it with Jesse Zardesi a couple of games ago, and it gets frustrating. Look, ultimately, Breck Shea or anybody else that gets called in, he's going to have to perform, and Jurgen Klinsmann will live and die by the results, especially this summer. Gold Cup, I think, is very, very important for Jurgen Klinsmann, although he certainly wasn't hired to have the U.S. do well at Gold Cup. This is all about winning the World Cup and doing well at the World Cup. So you have to reserve a little bit of judgment for ultimately when they would get to the World Cup. But you do, like, as I said yesterday, if you're an American soccer fan, to be given hope.
make me believe in this team, that it is going in a direction that is going to get you to the World Cup and have you be successful at a World Cup.
I only got one MLS question for you, Lexi, and that is just basically to clarify or to give me a little more clarity on a comment you made during the San Jose-Chicago match, first ever match at Avaya Stadium. You said that Harry Shipp might be too good for his team, which you you rarely hear expressed in a national platform like that. What did you mean by that, and how good is Harry Shipp that you would make that statement? Or how bad are the Fire, I guess, in that, if the reverse is true?
It's probably a combination of both, and it was done specifically in the moment that I was talking about it, watching that Chicago team. And it certainly doesn't mean that Chicago can't get better and either, I suppose, catch up to Harry, or Harry, and I don't want to see this, maybe regresses to where he is on the level, and in maybe one way that works out. But the reason that I said that was because when I look at the quality that is on Chicago, when I look at the, and it is important, the designations, the designated players that are on there, and then I watch that team play, and with the understanding that this is a early days and a work in progress, the things that Harry Shipp does, the things that Harry Shipp sees, are beyond what many of the players around him are able to do. And that's why I say that he, like I said on the broadcast, is almost too good for this team. We saw again this past weekend where he got the assist. He set up a couple of wonderful opportunities for his team. And I just think when it comes right down to it, and I said this on the broadcast, that he is, for me, the designated player. When we put that title on people, with that comes responsibility, and with that comes expectation. And if anybody's living up to the designated player expectations, it's a guy that isn't even a designated player, and that's Harry Shipp. And that's why I said that at the time, and I stand by it. And it doesn't mean that Chicago can't get much better as it starts to gel, and Mike McGee certainly coming back will help. But ultimately, I think that it was a good way of explaining how important Harry Shipp is and the quality that he is, and maybe also explaining how far Chicago needs to go.
Does his game translate to the international game?
He is a specific type of player, and I love him. And actually, when you talk to him, he's the first to recognize that he's not the traditional type of player in the way that he looks and certainly in the way that he plays. But I would love to have him on my team because I think he thinks about the game in a way that, and we've talked about this evolution and progression and maybe a more proactive type of approach. I think that when he thinks about the game and the way that he plays the game, he would be wonderful to see. If you're calling in the types of Lee Wins into the or Mix Diskerud in, I would love to see Harry Shipp involved because I also think that he brings a work ethic and a no-nonsense type of approach where he is able to yes, he has the ability to do beautiful things, but he also edits himself in the game to be as clear and concise when he's doing things. And that's something you don't find often in a very young player.
Alexi, always generous with your time, and thank you for your insights on Fox Sports 1 coverage. We appreciate it. We'll catch up with you during the season.
As always, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Show information, go to pitchpass.com.